You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the podcast of the Archaeo Book Club, an online community for lovers of archaeology and books.
Hello and welcome to episode 11 of the Archaeo Book Club podcast. My name is Tilly, and although unfortunately Judith is now ill, so it is just the two of us, we hope that she gets better soon, but I am here with my co-host Ash.
Hi!
And this episode, we're talking about the December reading theme for the Archaeo Book Club, which is Archaeologists Don't Dig Dinosaurs, and I feel like
huzzah!
First question. The funny thing is we have like a sort of set questions that we've just put in like the script template that we have for all of our podcast recordings. We have a script, and the first question that we usually ask is this a theme you often encounter in your, you know, work and studies? And I'm like, no.
It's the exact opposite. Archaeologists don't dig dinosaurs, man.
But then you do have the occasional, like, not naming any names, one of our book club members who is both a paleontologist and an archaeologist.
I know.
Just confuses everything.
Absolutely. What do you mean crossing disciplines? My God.
But do you actually get, did you have a lot of people coming up to you and sort of with the stereotype of
dinosaurs?
Oh my
God, it's all the time. It's like the second question. Isn't it? Are you an architect? Are you like?
That's the thing. For me, it was mainly architecture. Everyone thought I was an architect, which I was like, no.
I mean, I could give it a good go, but I don't think I'm doing very well.
Yeah, that's a building.
I can give you a nice drawing.
I mean, I guess, you know, we could talk about the archaeology of buildings. That sort of works, but ask me to design some like neoliberal, whatever they're called. I don't know what the term is.
Neoliberal.
I don't know.
What's a neoliberal? A neoliberal house.
It's probably
just like Bernie
style.
Sanders everywhere. To be fair, I think we're more familiar with houses definitely than like
dinosaurs. Exactly. Because the whole point of archaeology is, and history, and you know, if Judith was here, I'm sure she'd say the same, medieval literature is, it's about humans and
human activity.
Human activity. That's sort of what archaeology is, really. I mean, as much as, for example, the two of us are more focused on material remains than human remains, so we don't really deal with, like, skeletons and stuff. But even then, you're always linking it back to the people rather than dinosaurs.
Yeah, like if dinosaurs made flint, like maybe. Like, you know, if they made lithics, maybe. Maybe we'd be more interested.
Which maybe they are. Oh, so, okay. Genuinely just thought of this as a link.
Okay, here we
That's
go.
What I'm gonna link.
No, here we go.
So, as well as
wrong podcast.
As well as the incredible, yeah, I know, right? This is a problem. Well, no, so as well as the incredible series by Terry Pratchett. Terry Pratchett also wrote in collaboration with two scientists, so Ian Stewart, Jack Cohen, which are called The Science of Discworld, and they're kind of a mini series. I think there's five within it. And it is really cool. It's basically, it's not what we're doing on Am My Trowel, which is sort of looking at the archaeology of fantasy, you know. It's looking at the science that kind of inspired the things that happen on the Discworld. So, you know, even the fact that the world is flat, and then they talk about like, okay, but how does that work? And so why is our world round? Like, why does that happen? You know, sort of thing. So it goes into the real science of it and everything. And they have, basically it's the wizards on the Discworld have excess magic that they have to use up somehow, because otherwise the world's going to explode. And so they're like, oh shoot. So they're like, okay, let's make like a project and we'll just shovel the magic in there. And so they do, and they basically create this thing called the Round World, which is their like science project. And so for a long time, it's just like darkness and blackness, and then things start to form, and then all this other stuff happens. And it's basically like from the Big Bang to sort of the creation of the world. And then they're looking at it, but it's sort of in quick, it's like fast forward. So you sort of see the history of the world. So you see like the continents forming, you see life starting to form and like all these sorts of things. But it's really funny because it shows how like life forms and then everything dies, and then life forms and then everything's wiped out by a comet, and then life forms and then it's, you know, like it's sort of disaster after another. And the wizards are all getting really like hopeless, like, oh my God, nothing's ever going to progress and like that. And then one day at the very end, they come back and and it turns out that like there was a really complex civilization here, but they've all gone off to another planet now. So like they can't find them anymore. But what's really interesting, the point I'm trying to make is what's very interesting is that they had all of these other things happening. Like they didn't just have like the dinosaurs dying out. They had like loads of different civilizations building up and then getting wiped out. So they had one which was like the lizard people or something.
Of course.
Which I guess was like dinosaurs. They were sort of the dinosaurs. They were like these big dinosaurs and they had like complex structures and they started building pyramids and like all this sort of thing. But then everything was wiped out, like literally everything. And it got started from scratch again, you know, like each time. And they had this whole like philosophical section of the book, which is talking about like, we wouldn't actually know if, you know, depending on how badly the world got beaten up, you know, it could have been that there were earlier, you know, things like civilizations and things that just got completely wiped out. And then the world sort of reset itself and like started again, you know, kind of thing, which is quite interesting. So yeah, they had like a whole thing, a fictional scenario where like all the dinosaurs were having these big ceremonies and stuff. And it was quite funny. Anyway.
See, that reminds me of such a side note. But have you ever seen Futurama?
No, but I know it. Know of it. Yeah.
There's an episode that's very similar where Bender, who is a robot, gets like he's in space. I can't remember why he's in space, but a little civilization like literally starts to develop it on his chest, and he's like the god, and it goes through all these cycles, and he can't, and he's trying to help, but he does all these terrible things, and then they end up dying horribly. No. But like they go through all these different stages of evolution and civilization and stuff, and it's like it's the same snapshot into the world and creation, Big Bang and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it reminds me of that.
Yeah, no, but it's funny. So I guess if I'm trying to link it, I guess that would be a funny thing, you know. Indeed, imagine if we like found out that actually there were very intelligent civilizations before our world was even in existence, you know, like on our world. That would be quite an interesting deep paleo history.
I'd love it if there was like a dinosaur accountant.
Right,
that would make me really happy.
There probably would have been, right? If there was a complex society, then at some point you have to have accountants. Uh-huh. I mean, the first writing in human history is basically accounting. Like, right? It's how much people are getting paid for their work with that.
Well, there's quite a lot of romances around like dinosaurs, and they're just like in the office. Like an office romance with dinosaurs. Yeah, there's lots of stuff like that, like monsters and all that kind of stuff. So like if you imagine like a dinosaur in a suit, that is a protagonist in a romance novel somewhere. He's like CEO called Raptor. You know? Yeah. Like,
well, and I guess that is something actually that reminds me of when you said Raptor, of course, I immediately think of Jurassic Park.
That's what I was thinking, Jurassic Park.
And I guess there is a lot of discussion at the moment in archaeology about bringing back not necessarily dinosaurs, but like ancient species that have died out. So like they the whole direwolf thing, right? And wasn't actually a thing. And if anyone wants to learn more about that, go and listen to the Ethnocynology podcast, because David Ian Howe did a whole episode on that, I think. I can't remember which one now, but if you go back through, he does a whole thing about the alleged bringing back of the direwolves and why it's not actually a thing.
Yeah, but we'll link it in the show notes for you.
We'll link it in the show notes, exactly, so you can find it. But and then there's also like all this talk about like, should we bring back mammoths and all of these kinds of things, which... Yeah, I guess.
I mean, it would be fun.
It would be also, fun, but I think it would be cruel.
Yeah.
At some point, there is a reason why things die out in some cases.
Usually humans. So is there a reason, or is it just humans?
Well, exactly. I mean, it's the whole bringing things back. Like, I feel like bringing something back from the brink, that kind of works. But bringing things back from, like, where it's smashed down at the bottom of the cavern, like, that's...
It's a difficult one. They were thinking of reintroducing, I think it was lynxes, into Scotland, into the wildlife, and a lot of crofters and farmers were like, no, because livestock.
I mean, even that, at least it's like an existing creature that exists in the world and would be able to adapt. But I feel like so many of these extinct species, like, how would they even adapt to the modern day with global warming and things as well, right? It's so...
They would become weapons of mass destruction for the US military. That's happens in every single...
There we go.
That's what happens. Like, they're not being brought back for any other reason, okay? We want dinosaurs that are weapons.
I haven't actually seen the most recent.
No, Jurassic I can't. One. I can't do it.
See, the only reason that I kind of want to is because what's his name? The guy from Bridgerton who's in it?
Jonathan
Bailey?
Bailey. Yes.
Sorry, Jonathan, if you're listening. Jonathan Bailey, who plays like the professor in it. He also played the clarinet in the soundtrack.
He did. Yes, I saw that.
Song, which I'm like, oh my God. And speaking as someone who plays music, I'm like, that would be my dream.
That would be very cool. And he was like, he's a huge Jurassic Park fan.
Yes.
Which is really nice.
He was younger. Yeah.
So like that kind of like, that's our generation really, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I was at number two where the girl gets eaten by the tiny little dinosaurs. I always loved that bit. Why? I don't know. I was always like, ha ha.
I can't actually remember when I first saw Jurassic Park. I think.
Well, Jurassic Park must mean. I feel like it was 1991 or 1988.
Yeah, but I don't think I saw it until I was like a teenager. I feel like I just really? Never really. Yeah, I don't know. I just wasn't really interested in it. Which is funny because I loved like all of the other. Because it's Spielberg, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and I love I loved all the other Spielberg stuff, but yeah, but then it's weird because I was really interested in like ancient history, but I was always interested in like human evolution, like so later stages of history, which is also really fascinating. And actually, it's funny. So I'm currently, as luck would have it, I'm currently teaching a course about human evolution, so it's all fresh in my mind. I have a lecture tomorrow, and it's really interesting because, of course, the further back you go, the less evidence you have, right? Like for the, you know, fossils and sort of tools mm-hmm. and everything. And it's always so fascinating to see when you have people who are more involved in later times in history or even later times in prehistory, when you just have much more material evidence, everyone's a lot more careful about like making big sweeping assumptions and statements and, you know, things like that. Like everything's always caveated and stuff. Whereas the further back you go, I feel like everyone's just like, well, we can't unprove it. Like this is all the information we have. So we have to say something. So this is what we're saying. Like, which I mean, yeah, it's true. And that's actually what I really found with Arctic archaeology as well, because you have much smaller data sets. Like you don't have massive assemblages like you do in a lot of other places of the world. And so based on a quite small amount of artifacts, people are making these massive sweeping statements, which if I was anywhere else in the world, I'd be like, oh gosh, no, I can't make that kind of, you know, this is way too small a data set. But because that's all you have, you're like, well, I can't just say, oh, I don't know. You know, like you have to say something at some point. But
It's like the unknown, it fosters curiosity, but then it also fosters kind of conspiracy a lot of the time too as well, doesn't it? So you get these kind of very strange like theories that come out around. I mean, if you look even pseudo-archaeology, and I don't know why we've gone to pseudo-archaeology when we're talking about dinosaurs, but you know. But yeah, if you look at that, I mean, people thinking aliens built stuff and all that kind of stuff, but they just don't really look into it. And the Mesolithic in Scotland's like my thing. It's the same, like smaller data sets. We have a lot of lithic assemblages and that kind of stuff, but we have very little pottery. Even though there is pottery, people a lot of think you know, Mesolithic don't have pottery, but they do. It's just really coarse and it's very difficult to find, and when it's a very sandy site. But yeah, you get these kind of, you can, I think that's the beauty of it though, because like, you can explore. I always think if I went back in time, I would go to the Mesolithic in Scotland and I would see what they were wearing and like what they were dressed like, what their hair, I'm obsessed, like what's their hairstyles like? I want to know.
Right, yeah, because these are things that you can't reconstruct.
No, like, you can reconstruct it in illustrations and stuff, but they're still factored into modern society and how we would dress our hair. But like, how would they dress their hair? What was their name
periods
like?
As well, right?
Yeah, like, what was their language like? Like there's so much stuff that we have absolutely no clue about.
Yeah.
So that's definitely somewhere I'd go.
You could say the same with dinosaurs, right? There's so many different theories on like, did they have feathers? Did they have fur? Did they have the, you know, and like, and how they would look and stuff, which then you look at like, have you seen that thing, which is like, if a chicken, I can't remember what it is now. It's some, they've got some skeleton and they're like, if we had this skeleton and redid it as we have done the dinosaur skeletons, then actually a chicken would look like this, or like a swan would look like this or something. Like it's sort of all these things showing that like, actually, it's very much up to our imagination of what they
would
actually
be like. And that's what I think Jurassic Park as a film, not necessarily the book, because the book's very different, but the film has given you an idea of what dinosaurs are like. But then a lot of paleontologists have kind of come out and went, no, that, like, that's not really how it was. Like, apparently the roar for the T-Rex is a lion, but they wouldn't have sounded like that. They're kind of like chittery and stuff.
Hey, they sound like little birds or something.
Yeah. So the exact opposite. You wouldn't really maybe run away from that, but if you hear a lion's roar like a predator, of course, as a human, that instills fear in you. And they are horror, like they're family friendly horror. You don't want to be eaten by a dinosaur, certainly. No. That sounds horrible.
But also, isn't it that T-Rex was they called when they eat, like,
herbivore?
What's the word? No, it's not a herbivore, but no, I haven't heard that theory. Oh, carrion. Like, they ate carrion rather than
right. They were just like scavengers.
Yeah, scavengers. That's the word. Thank you. I don't know. I feel like I heard that theory somewhere. And that's why they have such the big head and stuff. Oh, maybe not. I don't know.
I just know, like, I remember, isn't there like a few different skeletons that they've got of different dinosaurs? Mm-hmm. And they've actually looked at them and then they've realized they've reconstructed it completely wrong. And it's actually several different dinosaurs, like, altogether. Because,
earliest dinosaurs. I can't. Oh my gosh. I have to see it. If I find the link, I'll put it in the show notes. I remember seeing this somewhere. The one of the very earliest dinosaur reconstructions just looks ridiculous. It's like completely wrong. It looks like a sort of duck creature. Like, it's so funny. And that was because, they had absolutely no clue about how to do this. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you a bit.
No, exactly. It's that kind of Captain Cook excavate. Like, when they go and they see a kangaroo and then somebody tells someone what a kangaroo looks like back. And I don't know wherever they came back, and they were like, "Oh, this is what kangaroo looks like," and they draw it, and it's like, "That's not a kangaroo at all."
That's like, oh, and it's a shame we don't have Judith here, because to lend her expertise when it comes to sort of medieval manuscripts and things. But that's but also, have you seen? There's all these memes of, like, you know, are you sure you know what a elephant looked like, medieval illustrator? Yes. And then you see the picture and it's like a weird sort of dolphin thing or something.
Well, like, I love the medieval cats, like, yes, medieval, exactly. Like, the human faces, and you're like, yes. What?
Okay. But yeah, and I guess that's the sort of, that was where, because dinosaurs were being found when they first started to be found, and there was all this link with dragons and stuff as well, right? Yeah. And like mythology and things, which is also quite rife in sort of medieval folklore in that respect and everything. Have you seen that? Oh, what's his name? Gaius Flavius on Instagram, who's also been on Ethnocynology. I hope you're going to give us a commission on this, because we are promoting your series like crazy here.
Come on, David.
Come on, David. Give us some of that hard cash. And he does a lot of funny reels. If you don't follow him, definitely go and give him a follow, especially if you're into kind of ancient Roman history. But he also does some other kind of funny reels and content creation. And he did one which is like, archaeologists, we have no idea how dinosaur bones would have been and how they are found and blah, 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 and everything. And then it's like medieval people. Yes, it's definitely a dragon.
But isn't there also like some bones that they found that were much larger and they're definitely dinosaur bones, but this is where like the Cyclops has come from.
Exactly.
Huge legs and things. So there's a lot of mythology that's tied to older bones, even hominid bones as well, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, there's also, I can even imagine so many that were, I guess with dinosaurs, it's harder, because I know that with ancient hominins, there were quite a few that were just completely misclassified at the beginning, because people didn't realize quite how many species there were and how many different lines. I mean, we had so many side branches of the tree that died out and didn't even continue, you know, evolving. Then we did continue, like our branch, you know, ages and ages ago. So it's sort of, you can only imagine. But then I guess those, they sort of look similar enough. So it's, this is either an ancient like ape or, you know, it is an ancient human. Whereas if you have dinosaur bones, that like, there's not really much living that you could compare that to. So I guess you would have to compare it with mythology, because what on earth else could it be, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it must have been quite confusing to see that kind of stuff. I mean, I live on Skye and we've got dinosaur footprints.
Oh,
stuff
cool. You have them there.
Huh? Okay. So apparently the dinosaur footprints found on the Isle of Skye belong to two main groups, sauropods, which are long-necked plant eaters, and theropods, which are bipedal meat-eating dinosaurs, possibly related to the Megalosaurus. Those tracks. Oh, this is blowing my little archaeology mind. These tracks were left 170 million years ago in the middle Jurassic period. That's pretty cool.
That is very cool. Well, that's, I mean, these time spans are also just mind blowing. Like, isn't there a thing that like T-Rex lived closer to, there's something that like this lived closer to Cleopatra than to the Brontosaurus or something, right? Like
there's so many different time periods.
So long, the dinosaurs did, which is just mind blowing. I mean, it's already
maybe we're archaeologists because we can't comprehend that
exactly. We're like, no, this is too much time. I mean, even paleoanthropology, I'm like, I mean, 6 million years ago, human ape ancestors like that diverged, and the chimps went off to become the chimps, and we went off to become the humans. Like that happened 6 million years ago, and then at some point, like there's certain hominin species that existed for like a couple of million years. We have not existed for that long, like as Homo sapiens, and it's just mind blowing.
See, I love that fact in Kindred by Rebecca Wagsaith.
Yes, great.
That
book.
Was like basically that Neanderthals were just like so happy living the way that they lived that they didn't change for like hundreds of thousands of years. Like they just were like, I'm fine the way I am. And then humans came along and then just like fucked that right up.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so I think we're going to have a quick break because although this time, usually, of course, we take two episodes to talk about our themes, but this time we are making it into one slightly longer episode because the APM production team are taking a very well-earned break over the holiday period. So we're going to do this one in one. So we've talked about the sort of field notes side of things so far. We haven't actually got the results of the book yet. So of the vote for the book club. So we don't actually know yet which book we're going to be reading for this theme, which is quite exciting. If you want to find out which book, then, you know, come and join our Discord server because the book will be announced in the next couple of days. I mean, it will be announced by the time the episode gets released. So you can definitely come along and you can see. Maybe we'll even have it in the show notes at that point as well. Let's have a very quick pause. And when we come back, we're going to be chatting about the bookworm side of things. Welcome back, everyone. So we did already talk a little bit about some sort of fictional depictions of dinosaurs and how that's kind of treated. But as we're looking at the bookworm section in this second half of the podcast, maybe we can discuss that a little bit more. So, I mean, I found that really interesting, actually, when I was looking up. So quite often for the book club, we'll get suggestions sent in by our members about that then are sort of put together, that they're put into a shortlist, which is three books, and then we vote on that shortlist, and that from that the final kind of book is chosen. And it's always really interesting to see what kind of books people are suggesting, but this time it really seemed like the majority of books related to dinosaurs are like thrillers, or you know, thrillers, I guess, or like adventure, you know.
We talked about it in part one because I mean Jurassic Park is a horror. It's like it's meant to be horrifying, to the idea of reanimating these extinct creatures to then live beside them. And I think it's kind of in that consciousness of like, oh, people sometimes think that dinosaurs and humans were the same chronology, and you're like no. So it's
thanks
horrifying,
all of those horrible 60s 70s 80s films that put us all in the same time period. That was great. Which honestly, so in the last course I taught, I did a whole thing about like visual anthropology and representation of culture and stuff, and I was looking up and there's these films, I can't even remember what it's called anymore, but it's like these people going around in like leopard skin bikinis with like big puffy hair, massive mascara, hairless legs, and there's like dinosaurs roaming around.
Isn't it like a barbarian kind of?
Oh, I mean, Conan the Barbarian is just...
No, not Conan.
You know.
Oh, God.
My boy Arnie, who's grunting his way through the entire thing.
See, I had never... I don't think I saw that one. I saw the Jason Momoa Conan the Barbarian.
See, I haven't seen that one. I kind of want to.
I think you'd like it. Yeah.
I probably would.
It's kind of that rip roaring adventure where he has very little lines. The same sort of thing.
Does he need them?
Does he need them?
Really? No. Yeah. But that's like all the good old. I mean, they're in the same line as to me as like Hercules, Legendary Tales, and, you know, those sort of 80s adventure films, which are just excellent. Mm-hmm. Really good. Very badly portraying a particular time period, but. Do we really mind?
There's a great archaeology film called The Viking Queen. Oh my God, it's hilarious. And it was 1967 it came out, right? And
I mean, that tells you a lot.
Every single, like, god Horns in it you can possibly think of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But it's Roman Britain and Zeus is in it for a bit. The Vikings are in it. Because it's Roman Britain, right? So Vikings are in it.
Of course, the Vikings are there. Yeah.
However, there is like. And so I remember one year when we were digging my university, we all dressed up as them. So I was one of the Roman soldiers and I made a very convincing Roman soldier.
Excellent.
I was quite, yeah. But apparently it's meant to kind of show you the story of Boudicca, but then also William Shakespeare's King Lear. It's and there's a point where they're just like Zeus and you're like, this makes no sense archaeologically. No sense.
I feel like someone wanted to make like a whole series. And they were like, nah, you only have one. And he was like, fine, I'll put it all in one film.
Everything that I like in one film. And they're also in like tiny bikinis because, of course, Boudicca wore a bikini. I mean, it's quite obvious archaeologically. Yeah. That metal like armor bikini was very... And there's probably a dinosaur in it. I don't even know.
Have you seen... There's a... Oh, what are they called? League of... Living La Vida League or something. And they're this group of... They're... I can't remember if they're Australian or New Zealanders. Apologies if you're listening, guys. I think they might be New Zealanders. And I don't think they're D&D players. They sort of are a gaming store, though, or like a gaming. They sell sort of games and D&D things and stuff like that, but they don't actually, they probably do play it themselves, but they're not like professional D&D players, but they do all of these hilarious skits about playing in like computer games. Oh, they're computer gamers, I think, as well. But they also have skits about like D&D, but it's sort of set in the world. So they're like doing all this stuff and it's all very funny. They're like very, it's comedy basically, and it's sort of spoof. And there's one of them where they're in a game and you've got a male warrior and a female warrior and they're, you know, going through and there's like they have their armor update or whatever and it's like, oh yeah, and then, you know, she's like, yeah, I'll get the armor update, and then he gets it and it's like this really cool rippled, you know, muscle chest and big fur coat and like all this sort of stuff, and then she's like, yeah, I'll get that as well, and she goes for it and it's like a tiny little chainmail bikini and like a little bit of fur over her shoulder and everything. And she's like, what the hell? And then there's a follow-up to it where they're like, oh yeah, we're doing gender neutral stuff, like blah, blah, blah. And so she goes to it, great, I'll get some of that new like gender neutral armor, and she gets it and it's a bikini again, and she's like, what the hell, like, no, you guys said this would be gender neutral. She's like, it is gender neutral. And then her male co-player is like laughing at her and going, yeah, I'll get a new this one and I'll have this thing and this thing. And then he's like, oh sorry, we are only offering the gender neutral stuff. He's like, oh whatever, fine, I guess I'll get the gender neutral stuff. And they give it to him and it's like a crotch cup, you know. He's like, what, no, this isn't gonna save me, like what is this, what the hell is this? And she's just like going,
yeah. That's fair. And this is why I love Baldur's Gate, because if you play Baldur's Gate 3, like honestly, you can dress them in absolutely anything, but the stats are unreal on all the armor. It doesn't even matter. And it's, gender neutral. So you can put a star in a bikini if you want, you know?
Anyway, I don't know how we got onto this topic because we're supposed to be talking about dinosaurs.
I don't know. So where's Judith? She needs to get us on the straight and narrow.
I know, right? Again. Judith, we
miss
you.
We've gone gremlin mode, Tilly.
I know. We've gone to set feral. But the point is, the reason why we're rambling so much, people listening, is because archaeologists don't dig dinosaurs. So we have no clue whether the representation of dinosaurs in popular fiction is accurate or not, because
no,
we have nothing to do with dinosaurs. So I feel like we have a good get out of jail free card.
This is not a dinosaur podcast, unfortunately.
No.
A rambling archaeology history.
Blame our
podcast.
Patreons because our Patreons suggest the themes, and we had a lot of them suggesting something about dinosaurs, which I was very against in the chat. Yeah. I was like, guys, no, the whole point is we're going against you. And they were like, but it'll just be fun. And I was like, fine, we'll put it down. And then they voted on that theme for this month. So I was like, fine, whatever. Yeah. We're talking about dinosaurs.
Have you read many dinosaur books?
No, not really. I've read like dragon books.
Yeah, dragon books. Yeah, fantasy and things.
Yeah, but like I'm not really about dinosaurs. The only one that I could think of, actually, which I will share in a second, is I don't know. Do you want me to go first with my sharing?
Yeah, go for it.
Which was really difficult because, like I say, I don't really. It's not that I don't pick to read again about dinosaurs, but just I don't know. It's not really something that I found super interesting, but I do like the idea of fossil hunting. And I feel like that's quite a common one with the type of books that I like. Like I quite like sort of mystery, historical adventure things. And a lot of that happens around kind of Victorian age where then this sort of fossil finding thing was happening, you know? Yeah, exactly. So the one that I picked is from the Veronica Speedwell mysteries, which are fantastic. Oh. If anyone is a fan of like the Amelia Peabody mysteries, the ancient Egyptian ones that we've talked about in other episodes of this podcast, but are thinking, oh, I don't know, not so into ancient Egypt. I kind of like my stories a little grittier and more city-based, then this is the series for you. And it's called, the particular one that is related to fossils is called A Sinister Revenge. It's by Dina Rayborn. And I'll read the blurb. Veronica's natural historian beau, Stoker, has been away in Bavaria for months, and their relationship is at an impasse. But when Veronica shows up before him with his brother Tiberius, Lord Templeton Vane, he is lured back home by an intriguing job offer, preparing an iguanodon for a very special dinner party. Tiberius has received a cryptic message along with the obituaries of two recently deceased members of his old group of friends, the Seven Sinners, that he too should get his affairs in order. Realizing he is in grave danger, but not knowing why, he plans a reunion party for the remaining sinners at his family estate to lure the killer out while Veronica and Stoker investigate. As the guests arrive and settle in, the evening's events turn deadly. More clues come to light, leading Veronica, Stoker, and Tiberius to uncover a shared past amongst the sinners that has led to the fatal present. But the truth might be far more sinister than what they were prepared for. And so, slight spoiler alert, it is very much all focused around the discovery of a massive dinosaur fossil, like skeleton, in the cliff face.
Okay.
And that's kind of the sparking factor of this whole situation that they find themselves in. So it's a big part of the story, his finding. And it's sort of related to the whole Mary Anning being a woman who found, you know, the Ichthyosaurus. Was that what she found?
Yeah,
I'm showing my ignorance of this now. Whatever dinosaur,
don't ask me these things.
I think it wasn't technically actually a dinosaur that she found, because I've recently learned that dinosaurs only refer to the land-based ones. So actually, and this was a water one or something. Anyway,
we're so professional.
Anyway, I don't know what that is. Big dinosaurs. Okay, I know nothing about dinosaurs. There's a reason I'm an archaeologist. I'm not a paleo. Hopefully, this is making people listening in realize. This is why we don't dig dinosaurs. This is why we get so frustrated when you ask us, but what dinosaur do you like? It's like, I don't know.
I don't know anything about dinosaurs.
But anyway, point being, there was Mary Anning, who's a very famous fossil hunter from the south of England. And it was kind of, she was really renowned for finding all of these incredible fossils. She found one particular skeleton, which I believe was an ichthyosaur, but I can't quite remember. But something very exciting that had never been found before. But it was sort of that thing of, you know, people didn't actually believe that she'd found it and all this kind of thing. And it's kind of building upon that idea of, if a woman finds something, then it can't be actually a real thing and it has to be discovered by a man in order for it to be.
But that's... Yes. That's also prevalent in archaeology, especially when people were discovering early Neanderthals in France.
Yes.
It was no, not ladies.
No.
Ladies can't find things.
Not ladies. Although what is very exciting is the Homo naledi, which is one of the kind of ancient ancestors of us, we think. And there was a very famous discovery from the Rising Star Cave, where they were found, and they found loads of individuals and discoveries. And actually what was really fascinating about that is the team were like 90% women, because one of the requirements for being a member of that particular excavation was that you had to be small enough and slim enough to fit into the cave, because there's some, and oh my goodness, I was watching a video of it in preparation for my lecture the
other day.
It's so horrifying. I'm incredibly claustrophobic, and just watching this made me like, oh,
well, that's what the game C14 Dating is based on. Yeah. Yeah, because it's in caves and stuff. Horrifying. Yeah, they were very slim, petite ladies, weren't they?
Yeah.
and
you had to. So that was then, it was a pro to be a woman in that case, because you were more likely to be able to fit through the cracks, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean,
I wouldn't
not
be.
Personally, I was about to
no,
say.
No,
I mean, I would have been. I mean, even if I had wanted to, I would have been there going like, oh no. Oh,
such a cheers
shame.
You on
oh,
from the sidelines.
Man. Oh no.
But they also had, not as well as being petite archaeologists, they also had to have like rock climbing ability and stuff like that as well, didn't they? They had to know how to rappel down and what to do in
definitely.
It.
Very exciting.
Yeah, no, I mean, I cried when I did a Hewitt, so absolutely not when I did my helicopter training, so I'm not getting in any cave. No, thank you. Deep coastals are enough for me.
No, I mean, I do enjoy scuba diving, even though I had a bit of a freak out with that at some point. Because
you are very adventurous. You're so more adventurous than I am.
But I never swam through like a cave, or I never swam through, I love diving wrecks, but I've never swum like into a wreck, because I'm like,
well, you see people do that all the time, and then
loads of people do it on the dives I'm on, and I mean, I'm sure it is safe, but I'm just like, but how sure are we?
Who was the first person to do that and was like, oh yeah, this is fine? Like, how do you know you're gonna get out the other side?
Yeah, exactly,
like,
exactly.
That's scary. Dinosaurs didn't do that
around
so.
The outside. Yes, exactly.
And look how far they came.
So yes, that's my book anyway. And it's quite interesting. And what I found out later, you can't actually find out that much about Diana Raiborn, who's the author. She's done lots of speaking and she's written loads of books. I mean, this is actually the 10th one of this series, the Veronica Speedwell Mysteries, just released in September, which is very exciting. So if anyway, I think they're very good. And it's interesting. So she is, Veronica is a lepidopterist, so studies butterflies. And Stoker is a taxidermist. So it's quite an interesting kind of
Stoker.
Background to the Stoker's, I mean, the name tells you everything you need
everything
to know
you need
about
to know.
The character. He has, you know, a scar and an eye patch and all sorts of things. It's great. Brilliant. Oh, it's amazing. It's really fantastic. It's right up my street, I must say. I love it. And it's just written quite well, I think, as well. And I like Diana Raiborn's style of writing. And she has a degree in English and history, I recently discovered. So, which explains a lot, because the historical background of it is very well researched, and there's usually some link to archaeology, or in this case paleontology, or something. Like, there's always a scientific link within the
I wonder what her, like, she's, I know she's got an English degree and a history degree, but what else is her background? Right? The STEM subjects
really
are like
it's fascinating to see. So anyway, so that's
I'm curious though with this book, so did you see any crossover, if there's a dinosaur remains being found, do you see any crossover in the archaeological kind of theory and practice than you would if you were uncovering a dinosaur? Like in the book, did that come across at all?
Yeah, they talk about, exactly. Yeah, no, that was, I mean, oh, try not to give too much away. Okay, so spoiler. If you want to read this and you don't want to have massive spoilers, then do it on. But basically, that's the whole
5 minutes.
Yes, exactly. But that's the whole, because I'm going to go on a tangent. that's the whole thing. So basically, I can't remember now. I can't remember exactly if it's the brother or sister, or if it's like the lovers that sort of, she discovers it and like shows it to him. And then he's the other thing. But basically, she's sort of obsessed with it. I believe it's brother and sister. And she wants to go out and rescue it because there's going to be a big storm, and she's worried that will expose it, and then that means that it'll all go away and no one will come to find it. And he's like, oh no, it's fine, we just won't excavate it and then it'll be safe. But then she finds out that actually he's been excavating it, and then
oh my God.
She gets very mad and basically pushes him off the cliff, and yes, that's the murder. So because he wants to take the find for himself. So even
what's
though
he planning
the
to do with it?
Yeah, like offer it to the museum and get recognition
money.
And academic.
It's always money.
Yeah, exactly.
Archaeologists never have money. Yes, right. It's always money.
there was definitely a lot about like the fact that it needed to stay preserved and it needed to, you know, remain hidden and stuff. And also what was interesting was a lot about indeed like the relevance to the academic community and like all of that kind of aspect as well, which is quite interesting. Like how, you know, the sort of very Victorian ideal in that respect, which I thought was quite interesting. Yeah. And that's quite similar in a lot of ways to the archaeology of the period.
It also kind of reminds me of one of the books that we've read a few years ago now, Women of the Dunes, like the same sort of theory, like on the sand and it's going to be exposed. Oh no, what do you do?
Yeah,
that's very interesting. Oh yeah, we do have a crossover.
Yeah, there you go. So that was my suggestion.
Well, that sounds good. I think I will read it.
It is good. I think you'd like them. I think they're really good.
I think you'll have to.
So I'm very curious because we did definitely have one or two suggestions from our romance readers for this theme, which were monster romances, which we have talked about on the podcast before. If you have not chosen a monster romance for this theme, Ash, I will be very disappointed.
I did. Yay! I chose the one that I suggested. Because it needs to be talked about that this in modern media
exists.
Okay.
And so tell us all.
It's called Monstrous Heat. It's the Dinosaurus Book One, which is a series, actually. Oh. And it turns into first of all, it's male, female. Male? He's a dinosaur. I don't know. And then it turns into a Why Choose. Okay, right. So later down the line in the series, right. Which is basically why choose a different really type of dinosaur? You can have as many dinosaurs as you like. And Julie Sue Burkhart lets you. Right. The reason why I chose this, right, is that actually she's not a paleontologist, the main character. She's an archaeologist. Who knows nothing about archaeology at all. But I was fascinated by the fact she was an archaeologist. So, yeah, I was like, this would be good because this is how she meets this dinosaur man, in the middle of his monstrous heat. Because she gets dropped off in the middle. Right, it's so bizarre. Like, this would never happen. She gets dropped off in the middle of a site by herself in the jungle.
Yeah. That's how we do all archaeology surveying.
Yeah.
And
she just takes it. She's like, oh, well, I suppose I've just got to dig now. But like, she just starts digging. And you're like, what are you doing? What are you digging for? Like, there's so many questions that I had in like the first like three chapters. I was like, why are you in this sketchy Guatemalan jungle? Like, with these random people that clearly aren't archaeologists. And like, I think it's alluded to that it's other stuff going on.
Government, something or other. Like,
and like this forest and that she's sort of been left for
the
dinosaurs. Okay. Yeah, but he's like a man dinosaur. It's confusing. Anyway, I'll read you the blurb, but
I'm
laugh.
I'm so excited for this. Yeah, that's fine.
I can't believe I'm reading this out loud on a podcast. Okay, Monstrous Heap. I'm lost in the jungle and there's something stalking me. Discovering a Mayan ruin in the Guatemalan jungle should have catapulted my archaeology, spelt incorrectly, career. But those lost hours from camp, worse, something is stalking me. It's not a jaguar. It's bigger than anything I've ever seen before and wicked fast. I can't outrun it. I don't have weapons. When it catches me, I can't help but think I've fallen back through to the Jurassic period because the creature looks like a T-Rex and a raptor. And a very vicious had a very vicious baby. Sorry, I got distracted by that. It's hungry too. Very hungry. So it doesn't hurt me yet. Then a naked man comes to my rescue. Not sus at all. Trottle. I think a Croctor. Says his squad is on the top secret mission to Earth. And his outrageous physique certainly fits the part of a lab-centered super soldier alien, see, I told you, who coincidentally smells like the dino predator that chased me. Weird. He smells like it. He claims I can help him through his heat, but by the burning way he looks at me, he doesn't mean air temperature. In fact, I suspect that I'm next on the menu. After he plays with his food, he's even calling his squad to come and see what he caught. I don't think I'm getting out of the jungle alive.
Wait, so he comes to the rescue and then is like, oh, actually.
Yeah, he's like, oh, she smells really good. Yum.
Oh, my goodness.
And then, like, yeah, so he's like he's like an alien dinosaur super soldier that has been transplanted into the Guatemalan jungle.
I mean, this is like all of the stereotypes and pseudo-archaeology shoved into one book.
Yeah, this is why I thought it was a great pick for the book club, because we could unpick all of this.
This would have... Oh, can you imagine the discussion? If we... No, it's not on the shortlist, is it? Sorry.
No, unfortunately not. This is why I picked it. But I recommend we should read it at some point because there is bits in it. I mean,
so much discussions.
It is mostly smart, not going to lie. But like, there is bits into it that you're kind of like, how are you an archaeologist? One, like, what are you doing here? Why is this? There's no red flags that have been like, she's basically kidnapped and put into the Guatemalan jungle with a trowel. Actually, no, I don't think she has a trowel. I think she has a shovel. Which is the most annoying thing. Yeah, she's just sort of digging in the roots, and you're like, "What are you doing, girl? I don't understand." But there's five of these.
There's nothing there if it's a.
There's nothing there. What are you doing? So there's so much stuff that we can't actually talk about because there is so many, like, it's the stereotypes of archaeologists, it's the stereotypes of dinosaurs, male supermen. Superhuman soldier, alien dinosaur man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who smells like a dino predator. I don't know what a dino predator smells like.
Yeah, right.
Apparently it's like, nice. Storms and things. You know, that kind of romantic tension.
Yeah,
there
are always storms. He smells like a storm on a winter's night.
And she smells like a peach, you know, like
oh god.
But basically she gets about and then later in the series she gets about four different or five dino boyfriends and she has a baby and everything dino baby like loads of stuff. So there you go.
I know it would cause really interesting discussion, but even then I'm really not sure I
oh no
want
it's,
to
it's for a different type of palette definitely.
I mean
it's actually really well written, which is quite funny.
It
has so many good reviews on like Goodreads and Amazon and all of those ones you can get it on. I'm pretty sure it's on Kindle Unlimited.
Like, I feel like even if they're really well written and if they're really popular, if they have a bad representation of archaeology, I'm just immediately like, no.
I tried to look at Jolie Sue Bunkart to see if she had an archaeology or a paleontology background. Unfortunately, I can't find much on her other than she's written so many books.
Oh, this is so many the books, link between our two authors, between our two picks, is that we can't find anything about our authors.
Can't
our
find
authors
anything.
Are mysteries.
Yeah, so she writes a lot of different romances, but not all of them dinosaur related, unfortunately. But that is a huge thing in monster romance. There's some great ones.
You know, accountants in the CEO dinosaur one in the last part. So.
I don't actually know if that's real, but it will be somewhere.
It probably is. Like, if not, then listener, you know your duty.
Like, there's so many great, like, this is a great title.
Dinosaur CEO romance.
Honestly, there'll be loads. There's loads of stuff like that.
Imagine if you had a dinosaur who was an archaeologist.
That would be trippy.
Right?
Wouldn't they have been there for it all?
Oh my good! But would they? Because they're new. They're not millions of years old.
An immortal vampire dinosaur. She was an archaeologist. Tilly, let's write this. This sounds brilliant. Who actually digs the Guatemalan jungle well.
Yeah. Provides like a full-on survey beforehand, clears it with the local tribes, like ensures that sorted. Okay, next Scribbler's Corner.
That's what we're going to do collectively all together. We're going to write
book club members, if you're listening, this is next steps. On that
even
note,
if you don't write fiction, you're going to write this.
I think that's as good a place as any to end this podcast episode.
Vampire Velociraptor, that's what it'll be called.
Well, thank you very much everyone for listening to this slightly alternative episode. Like I say, we were sort of a bit, I guess we couldn't really say much about it because archaeologists don't dig dinosaurs. We cannot say this enough. But that doesn't mean we're not interested in occasionally reading about them. If you want to read along with this month's pick, as I say, we haven't actually, at the time of recording, we haven't voted on it yet, but by the time this episode is released, we will have. So come along and join our free community Discord server to chat with fellow book club members. All of the links for how to join the club, as well as a reading list and any other links of interest, are included in the show notes. As I mentioned, we're taking a little bit of a break over Christmas, but don't worry, we will be back in January with our January read. So for now, until then, happy reading, happy holidays, and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Archaeo Book Club podcast, produced by the APN. If you want to join the club or just get more information, check out our website at www.archeobookclub.com.
The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultural Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.